afternoon. My name is Beverly, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to today's Michigan Clean Energy Economy Call, organized by the Center for American Progress. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Tara McGinnis, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank everyone, both our speakers and our callers, for joining us today. My name is Tara McGinnis with the Center for American Progress, and just I will introduce briefly the three speakers for this call and let folks know that if they have any questions, we'll be recording the call if people need pieces or segment of it afterwards. And if you have any questions or want to do follow-up interviews, you can email Susie Emmerling at SEMMERLING at AmericanProgress.org. First, we have speaking Kate Gordon, the Vice President of Energy Policy at the Center for American Progress and co-director of the Apollo Project, followed by Kil Ha, the Project Director of Research for the Pew Center on the States, followed by Keith Cooley, the President and CEO of Next Energy Detroit. And if you need the spelling of everyone's last name, it's Kate Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, Kil, K-I-L-H-U-H, and Keith, K-E-I-T-H-C-O-O-L-E-Y. And again, if you have any questions after the call, feel free. We'll open the lines up for questions for our speakers, but if you want any further materials, we're happy to help. With no further ado, I'm going to turn this call over to Kate Gordon, the Vice President of Energy Policy at the Center for American Progress.
Thank you, Tara, and thanks, everyone, for joining the call. It's great to be able to talk about these important issues. We really wanted, in light of the debate moving from the House to the Senate on clean energy and climate and the media focus really on the impact of clean energy investments on the economy, we wanted to take an opportunity to talk about a recent report that we at CAP commissioned from Robert Pollin at UMass Amherst Political Economy Research Institute, or PERI, about a month ago, really looking specifically at the job creation from both the Recovery Act or stimulus bill and the Clean Energy Act that recently came out of the House. As folks know, I think we really are at a historic crossroads here. We're at this moment of deciding whether to move forward to a future powered by cleaner and more efficient energy or whether to continue business as usual. And I think a lot of people really feel strongly that moving forward will lower carbon emissions and avoid cost of inaction and create millions of new jobs. We at CAP wanted to back up that, you know, those kind of broad sense of this being a historic moment with some real numbers on what kind of jobs and how many jobs will be created by that kind of transition. What we found was that between the Recovery Act and the Clean Energy Bill, again, now coming into the Senate, there are about $150 billion in new clean energy investments. That is a massive amount of spending. It's probably the largest domestic energy bill in terms of clean energy investments at one time that we've ever had. And most of those investments are energy efficiency investments and clean energy technology investments. What those investments do, we found in this study, is to create a net gain of 1.7 million jobs across the country and really improve opportunities for low-income families. To look at Michigan specifically, we found that those investments would create over almost 54,000 jobs in Michigan and lower the employment rate, which is currently at 8.4%, lower that down to 7.3% with those investments and those new jobs. Important pieces to note are that, you know, number one, clean energy investments, which we haven't seen a lot of in the past, honestly, this is sort of a new way forward, create three times as many jobs as the same level of investments in fossil fuel technologies. That's because these are investments in new systems, in new infrastructure. It's a lot of construction. It's a lot of maintenance. It's a lot of manufacturing, whereas fossil fuel investments tend to be more just maintaining the current system. We've also found that nearly half of those new jobs are accessible to workers with relatively low levels of education, with high school diplomas. The Midwest has a high number of folks with either no college or some college. These are accessible jobs, and they're pathway jobs that go into career paths, especially those jobs in manufacturing and construction. And that also that these investments are heavily focused on energy efficiency, which brings down building costs, building energy costs, and importantly for the Midwest, brings down the cost of doing business at industrial firms that use a lot of energy. So this is a big, big boon to Michigan. One thing I wanted to note, because it wasn't in the Perry report, but I wanted to note it happened after we published that report, was that just before the bill came out of the House, a provision was added in the manager's amendment, a provision to do about $30 billion of investments in a revolving loan program directly to small and mid-sized component parts manufacturers who are, in order that they could scale up to make the parts for the clean energy economy. What that does is to ensure that not only are we inventing, installing, and maintaining these systems here in the U.S., but we're making them here, too. That is an enormous boon to a place like Michigan with a very strong manufacturing infrastructure, lots of skilled workers, the ability to retool and really become the suppliers to this market. So we really think that, you know, there's a good reason people are comparing this moment to the Apollo project, or to the Manhattan Project or the Industrial Revolution. It is, we're at the cusp of a new way of moving forward in the economy, and it's a new way that's going to be absolutely beneficial to the state of Michigan. Thanks, Tara.
Thanks very much, Kate. And now, Kill?
Thanks, Tara. Thanks, Kate. The Cat Perry report was a look forward in terms of the potential of the clean energy economy. And what Pew tried to do was examine trends that had taken place between a specific period of time, 1998 to 2007. And in our analysis of the clean energy economy, what we found that is, though still in its infancy, America's clean energy economy is emerging as an engine that can help power this country forward while also protecting the environment. Let me give you some of our findings. Between our study period, 1998 and 2007, we found that the clean energy economy had grown more rapidly than jobs in the overall economy. The jobs in the clean energy sector grew at 9.1%, while jobs overall only grew by 3.7%. Second, this relatively new sector is home to a significant number of jobs, especially when you consider that it's lacked sustained government support. By 2007, there were more than 68,200 businesses across all 50 states in Washington, D.C., and these businesses accounted for more than 770,000 jobs in the clean energy economy. To put these numbers in perspective, I'd like to compare the 770,000 jobs to a couple of other sectors. Biotechnology, for example, which has been the focus of public policy and government and private investment through the 1990s and this decade, and is often a sector that governors and mayors alike try to lure into their particular communities, only employed fewer than 200,000 workers in 2007, and these are generous estimates. And you know, let's think about the well-established traditional energy sector, including utilities, coal mining, oil and gas extraction, industries that have received significant government investment over many, many decades. These jobs comprised about 1.27 million workers in 2007. So put the 770,000 jobs in that context, and you realize just how significant the clean energy economy is. Third, I'd like to highlight that every state has a piece of the clean energy economy, including Michigan, with its 22,700 jobs and nearly 2,000 businesses. These jobs, businesses, and investments are not only in states that are traditionally known for their environmental records, like California, but in states throughout the country. In fact, in 38 states in the District of Columbia, jobs in the clean energy economy outperformed jobs overall. The one thing that I'd like to focus on also is that in seven states, including Michigan, many jobs overall had been on the decline, but the clean energy economy really served as a buffer for even more job loss. For example, in Michigan, the jobs in the clean energy economy grew by nearly 11%, while jobs overall declined by 3.6%. And to just drive this home, about the importance of the clean energy economy, I'd like to share an anecdote that we uncovered while doing some of our research. Michigan has long been in a recession. In fact, Michigan has started losing jobs beginning in 2000. 2000, and you know, the auto manufacturing industry, as we all know, has faltered significantly in recent times. By June of 2009, the state's unemployment rate was the highest in the country. It stood at 15.2%, and Michigan's unemployment rate increased by 7 percentage points from the previous year before that. But the clean energy economy is really an important part of Governor Granholm's No Worker Left Behind program. In fact, it's its centerpiece. And, you know, in one particular town, Greenville, Michigan, the clean energy economy has been a very important piece of its economic recovery. When Electrolux Home Products, a major refrigeration company, moved its operations to Mexico in 2005, a third of its 8,000-plus residents were out of work, including a gentleman named Dave Woodman, who's a 48-year-old manufacturing worker. He did not see this coming. The refrigeration factory had been in Greenville for over 100 years, and it was the main source of jobs. But at the same time Electrolux was leaving, United Solar Ovonics was looking for United Solar Ovonics, which is a world leader in thin film solar technology, was looking for a place to expand. And it was wooed by a number of states, including Michigan, but Michigan ultimately prevailed and is the base of has been the base of U.S. Ovonics' U.S. expansion plans. And part of what made that partnership successful was the partnership that the U.S. Ovonics, as well as the state of Michigan and the local community college, had in training its workers specifically for that factory and its operations. Today, it employs about 400 workers in the Greenville plant, and it plans to add another 500 and also expand into a neighboring state in Tennessee. You know, and while the 800 jobs that they plan for Michigan are not nearly the amount of the jobs that were lost, nearly 2,000 by Electrolux's movement into Mexico, but it still played an important part in the state of Michigan. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Keith.
Hey, thank you very much. Can everyone hear me okay? Because I'm on speakerphone, if you don't mind. I'm going to assume the answer is yes. Yeah, I'm going to assume the answer is yes. So first of all, good afternoon. It's good to be a part of this conference. I am the CEO for NextEnergy, and some of you know that this is the ground zero for the Vice President's comments tomorrow. So I've been running around like a chicken with my head cut off, but it's a good thing, very much because of this venue sort of reflects the work we've been trying to do here in Michigan in general and in Detroit in particular around sort of jump-starting the economy with new businesses, new industries around clean tech and alternative energy, and providing the jobs that go with those. The point made about the 15.2% unemployment is exactly right. We probably stand at that point for a little bit higher than that across Michigan now, and in Detroit and some other areas, it's much higher. But over the years in the auto industry alone, I'll bet that comes to something like almost a half a million jobs lost. And we will not gain those back 100,000 at a time, as has been pointed out here. It's going to be small victories, you know, the 1,000, the 10,000, the 8,000 jobs, 400 and 500 in some cases, that will help us eventually win the day. But that, be that as it may, that work has begun and is running apace here in the state. NextEnergy is working carefully with the governor, staff, and with Michigan Economic Development Corp to provide key incentives, awards, grants for businesses that are building some capacity around solar, wind, biomass, and, of course, advanced storage systems like the lithium-ion battery. And I think it could very well be that the announcement tomorrow will be around that piece. And we have had any number of, I guess I'd call it success stories, especially in the wind area, and we're seeing some now in biomass. An example in the wind arena, we have a number of suppliers, as many of you know, that supply the automotive industry, GM and Chrysler and Ford, and have fallen on hard times as those have declined. We have been able to arrange for matchmaking opportunities for some of these folks who, for example, if you're going to make transmission gear that's, say, 1 foot in diameter for an automotive product, If you make it 3 or 4 feet in diameter, perhaps it fits very well in a wind turbine generator. And we provided a number of matchmaking opportunities in that area and have to date, I say in the last year or so, booked about $400 million worth of new business with original equipment manufacturers for wind turbine power generation systems that have come, many who have come from offshore, from the international and European scene here into the state. I think that's a testament to two things. One, that the Michigan's technology and R&D expertise has been legendary in the past, continues to be known across the world, and is part of what's made the difference, why they've chosen to use us instead of some others. But two, it also reflects the fact, as was mentioned by the two other speakers, that we are beginning to win back the jobs that had been there. I mean, we're talking new jobs and we're talking saved jobs. Those are both very important to us. And clearly, we continue to push to make sure that the data, the data that has been brought out at this conference continues to grow. The numbers of jobs that have been created by the new work continue to grow. I'm going to go out a little bit on a limb, but not too much, by offering that one of the things that will continue to help will be at some point a push for a national renewable portfolio standard. We were flagging here in Michigan in terms of getting attraction for our state for companies in the alternative energy space until the RPS was signed last year by the governor here at Next Energy, which provides for 10% efficiency, 10% of the power generation in the state has to be from alternative fuels, clean tech, by the year 2015. Once that hit, things started to happen quite quickly. I think it's going to be important across the country. And then, of course, some opportunity, as we are all looking for, some strategy that will provide a market pull for this work. Gas at $4 a gallon was a great thing, in terms of being able to provide the impetus for these changes to get made. It didn't do a lot for the pocketbooks of many Americans. That's true, and clearly we want to be careful about that, but we need to find a way through incentives or something to make sure that the work that starts now can continue apace. But clearly Michigan is ground zero. We've hit the ground running. We're pushing hard in those four areas I mentioned, and I see nothing but success for us going forward. It isn't going to be easy. It isn't going to be quick, but it will be done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith. And at this time, I would like to open the line to any questions, if any reporters have any questions. We'll take one or two now.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Siobhan Hughes with Dow Jones Newswire.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Two separate questions. One is, some of the big renewable energy companies like General Electric have said that unless there is a pretty strong national short-term RPS standard, something like 12% in 2012, manufacturing jobs will not be created in the U.S. Those will all go offshore, and only the jobs of actually putting up equipment will be in the U.S. I wonder what the response to that is. And also, the gentleman mentioned something about a lithium-ion battery announcement he thinks is coming soon, and I wonder if he could elaborate on that.
Well, this is Keith Cooley. I think I was the one that mentioned the awards coming. I don't have the details because I wasn't personally briefed by the advance team from the White House. I'm only reading what I get in the papers, as Mark Twain would once have said. But the belief here is that based on what we know about tax credits, et cetera, around advanced storage systems, there's a very good probability that the discussion tomorrow will be on advanced battery systems, lithium-ion being obviously the top one, and the work that would be done by partnerships with the three automotives in the area and several of the battery companies that are either in the area or building plants in the area. So hopefully you'll be here tomorrow, and you can hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
And this is Kate Gordon on the manufacturing question. I think it's a really, really good point. It's one of the reasons that at CAP we've always advocated, and when I was at Apollo, we always advocated comprehensive energy strategy. It's absolutely true that you have to be able to create the demand for renewable energy systems to have a robust market. We've seen that in our European competitors. It's very, very clear that a strong RPS is essential. But it's also essential to have complementary policies that invest in the in your manufacturing infrastructure, in your workforce, and in being able to move that energy once it's made. So, you know, an RPS on its own, we have that in 30 states right now, but 70% of the component parts of the clean energy system are made elsewhere right now. So we have good RPSs in a lot of places, but we need the complementary policies that countries like Germany and Italy and Spain and China and India increasingly are putting in place, which really invest not just in creating that demand, but also scaling up to meet it through a strong workforce development system and workforce training system and a strong manufacturing infrastructure. It's why the fact that there are now investments directly into component part manufacturers in the United States is a really important part of the bill that was passed, but so is the RPS and so is the grid investments and all the complementary measures that really make it possible.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is Keith Cooley again. So I think the first question also included a question on is 12% by 2012 a good thing? And my answer to that would be 12% by 2012 is a good thing, especially when you compare it to what we have now nationally. I don't know if that's the right number. I'm always someone who wants to be a little more aggressive in a little shorter time frame, but 2012 is only about 2.5 years away. And the real question becomes, what challenges does that present to the infrastructure in place across the nation as that comes on? But some form of our national RPS is clearly needed if we're going to meet the challenges that are going to sneak up and bite us not too far in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Steve Carmody with Michigan Radio.
Thank you. Mr. Cooley, I was wondering if you could just expand your thoughts about having the Vice President come to Next Energy tomorrow. What does that mean for your company in particular to have the Vice President there to make a major announcement?
Hi, Steve. Listen to you quite a bit, so yeah, I'm glad you're on. Having the Vice President come and make this presentation here is huge for us, I think. We are a small organization. For folks who don't know us, we're a business accelerator that helped to take startup companies and mature them in the alternative energy space. And we also do some work in helping, automotive suppliers sort of dilute their futures in automotive and go to energy too. But the thing that's most important for me is I think, Steve, this is a reflection of the role we have been trying to play as the honest broker in the middle of all of this. Clearly, there's all sorts of agendas when it comes. When money gets put on the table, there are typically all sorts of agendas, and folks can become kind of parochial around what they want and what they think they need. We've tried to be in the middle of this maelstrom and try to set ourselves up as folks that maybe won't be completely agnostic about decisions to be made, but certainly would be willing to say the things that are important to be said as an honest broker when it comes time to help to make decisions around whether or not a particular point of view or a particular direction is the right way to go. I think we've done that. I think we've shown in spades over the last few years that we are committed to making the state and hopefully, by reflection, the nation develop a good program for the state and the nation around alternative energy. And I hope what we're doing here is the Vice President coming as a reflection of that.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Rose with BNA.
Hi there. It's Michael Rose from BNA's Daily Labor Report. I wanted to draw attention back to what somebody said that, you know, I think it was the Electrolux factory that had employed about 2,000 people and that there were 800 jobs, you know, come in with this new company. You know, what can be done to sort of get employment back up to the level it once was? I mean, 54,000 jobs that you're saying could be, you know, created through clean energy technologies is just, you know, a fraction of what's been lost in Michigan so far. So I'm just sort of wondering how you respond to that and, you know, if there's any other steps you think could be taken. This is for anybody who wants to answer.
This is Kate Gordon. I'll take a quick shot at it. I think that's an incredibly important question. One thing I wanted to draw attention back to that we found in the Perry report that we commissioned was that investments in these areas, and particularly energy efficiency, renewable energy, and the infrastructure related to those, does create more jobs, almost three times as many jobs as investments in the fossil fuel industry. So one thing we're talking about is simply shifting the way that we generate, use, you know, maintain, and save energy from one set of things to, you know, over a long time to another. Just to put numbers on that, we found in that report that $150 billion of investments in clean energy would create overall about 2.5 million jobs, whereas those same investments on fossil fuel industries would create only 800,000. What we did to get to the net 1.7 number was to subtract the 800,000 from the 2.5 million, which is somewhat, I mean, it's not as if those investments are just simply not going to continue to be made in fossil fuels. But in any case, it's almost three times as many jobs because it's more labor intensive. There's more infrastructure jobs. It's this whole new set of infrastructure jobs, kind of like in the Industrial Revolution. I mean, it's an entirely new set of industries and a new set of infrastructure and massive upgrades to existing infrastructure. So it's more jobs than in other industries, and I think that's important. But the other point is, you know, is well taken. You know, we're not talking about replacing every job that's been lost, but we are talking about a major economic growth potential and also something that kind of like the Apollo project can really change how we think about doing economic growth and investing in our manufacturing and construction and education and workforce and a number of things in the country. We're talking about sort of a new way of doing business. And I think that the number of jobs created through one set of investments is one thing, but the potential for long-term economic growth if the United States becomes a leader, technological leader in this area, as we did because of the space race, that's a whole other thing. That's an enormous number of new industries, new inventions, new licenses, you know, new construction, new infrastructure, new manufacturing. It has huge future potential.
Thank you.
I want to tag on to that for a minute. This is Keith Cooley again. I'm sorry. I want to tag on to that a little bit, too, because it's exactly in the right direction. And by the way, I used to run the Department of Labor and Economic Growth for the governor, and that data that came out of Greenville came off one of our guys in our workforce area. But alternative energy is only one of five priorities the state has put forward in terms of kickstarting the economy and growing new jobs. The other four areas are advanced manufacturing, life sciences, healthcare, and homeland security. So we do understand that alternative energy is only one piece of the puzzle, not the entire pie, if you will, and that we expect for there to be growth, perhaps even more growth, in some of these other areas as we go along. And the other piece of this puzzle is that comment about new jobs and new technologies. That to get from where we are today to I think the comment's been made in some of the literature that by 2050, globally, the world will have to have weaned itself away from carbon-producing or energy production that involves carbon by about 80% of what we were in 2005. That's huge. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. I mean, it's like 10,000 nuclear plants have to go online or some nonsense like that. Well, what we really believe is going to happen is that new disruptive technologies will come about. I think Secretary Chu has talked about that also. That will come into play. That will help us to jump from where we are now to leap to new opportunities to produce energy without all of the issues around climate change and greenhouse gases a little bit like the jet plane is to a propeller-driven plane, will be those technologies. Some of those aren't even invented yet. Maybe there's folks and little kids in kindergarten who are going to grow into positions where they can provide some of this Nobel-winning kind of inventiveness. But those technologies in their own right will drive additional jobs, too. And as we begin to find ways here in the United States to export some of these things to third world countries or places on the globe who don't enjoy the same level of luxury that we have, I think you're going to see businesses and industries grow up that we never even thought about.
Thanks.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions at this time.
Great. If there are no further questions at this time, I want to thank our participants and our speakers for joining us today. If you have any further questions or for reporters who'd like to follow up and get audio from the call, again, SEMMERLING at AmericanProgress.org. Thank you very much for joining us today. Again, this is Tara McGinnis from the Center for American Progress. Thanks again to all of our speakers.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.
Thank you.